A beleaguered vaccine rollout scheme is hit by another scandal. We hear about dogs' dining habits and a landmark moment for two Cork mums. This is Playback Daily with me, Gemma Craddock. Here's a taste.
Yeah, it's just 12 David Norrises basically snoozing, isn't it, Seanad Héireann? I've been here for 75 years. I'm 80% mahogany and velvet curtain at this stage. Yes, Mr. Cahillach.
And I suppose with twins, once you get one sorted out, the other needs attention.
Yeah, and I think they can telepathically talk to each other at the moment to say, I'm going to have a little bit of a sleep now, let you kick off.
It's very difficult to understand how a hospital serving and looking after patients like my mother does not include them on a standby list when they're an active category.
There's been understandable outrage at the news that the Beacon Hospital in Dublin gave 20 leftover vaccines to staff members at a private school in Bray. A private school attended by the children of the CEO. On Today with Claire Byrne, journalist Craig Hughes gave us the details.
Okay, so on Tuesday, frontline HSE healthcare workers were being vaccinated at the Beacon Hospital in Sandyford. The hospital has been used as a hub to vaccinate frontline healthcare workers. I think they've done over 9,000 so far. And at the end of the day on Tuesday, there were 20 doses left over. And a decision was taken to contact St. Jude's Private School in Bray and offer the doses to teachers who would get to the Beacon at very short notice. Now, the story takes another turn in that, as I reported today in the Daily Mail, that the children of the CEO of the hospital, Michael Cullen, also attend the school. And in response to my questions last night, a PR company for the hospital initially claimed that the doses were administered within the community. However, it should be pointed out that the school is in a different county and 13 kilometres from the hospital.
Okay, so the extra doses, how did that happen, that there were extra spare doses at the end of the day?
So what the hospital is saying is that a HSE error initially led to some double bookings happening. So some healthcare workers were told to go to both the Beacon and the Aviva Stadium. The hospital are saying that there was 200 no-shows on that day. And at the end of the day, at around 4:30, 20 doses left over. They're using the AstraZeneca vaccine. And once you open a vial of the vaccine, all of those doses need to be used within 6 hours. So my sources in there are saying that they realised at 4:30, the clinic was due to end at 5, that they had the spare doses. And the call went out to the school to see if they could get the teachers here. Now, of course, it should be noted that the HSE has clear protocols in place here and that there should have been a standby list in place with people who are next in line in the sequencing to get the vaccine to be called. And it doesn't appear that happened.
OK, and we don't know, or do we, whether any of these people, the teachers and staff from the school, were they in any of the at-risk groups?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, we have a statement from the CEO of the Beacon, Michael Cullen, and he said this morning, I recognise that the decision was made was not in line with the sequencing guidelines in place from the HSE. However, it was made under time pressure and with a view to ensuring that the vaccine did not go to waste. I sincerely apologise for the upset that this decision has caused, and we're updating our approach to our backup list to ensure that this situation does not arise again. You didn't get an explanation, though, did you, Craig, as to why St. Jude's School was contacted?
I didn't know. And I asked both the school and both the hospital last night. The school said no comment. And the hospital, until the story published this morning, only said that the doses were administered locally. They didn't answer a series of questions relating to the methodology around that.
And we know that the vaccine has a very short shelf life once it's taken out of the cold storage. How long did they have to find people to take these extra doses?
So my sources in the hospital said that they thought they had about an hour and a half of a window. And of course, the question that I would have been asking if I was in there was, you know, there would have been, you know, certainly Gardaí would have been one that would jump to my mind if I had such short time period, you know, frontline workers like that who are very accessible. But just going back to the HSE guidelines, there really should be a clear list in place of people who are not only next in line, but who can get to the hospital in a short period of time. I mean, the guidelines are pretty clear in that regard.
The HSE CEO, Paul Reid, was on Morning Ireland talking about this, and he said there are very clearly guidelines in place, very clear guidelines going out, and we cannot condone when something like this happens. And he said he's extremely annoyed and frustrated for the public and for the HSE when incidents like this happen. But what are the consequences?
Well, I think the reality is there will be no consequences. I mean, this is a private hospital who is running a vaccination clinic for free to assist the state. And it seems to be running it very efficiently, apart from this incident, it must be said. And so I don't think there'll be any consequences. But I think, you know, when I posted the story to the front page last night, there was so much anger online. I mean, I think Sinn Féin TD, John Brady, the local TD there, described it as privilege, looking after privilege. And if you can just imagine, there's been so many people who've had their vaccines cancelled, who've been cocooning at home for a long time, who might have an underlying medical condition. And for them, it's just so infuriating.
And it's not the first time, of course, that we've heard about issues surrounding the administration of access to vaccines, Craig.
No, of course, we had the two very high-profile cases in the Rotunda Hospital where family members received vaccines, and also in the Coombe. Also in the Mail on Sunday 2 weeks ago, we had we revealed that administrative staff in the HSE got a notification a day before to come get leftover vaccines a day in advance. So there's been serious mismanagement of the vaccine rollout, not just by the private hospitals, but also by the HSE.
And we've contacted St Gerard's School this morning, Craig, and they have said they aren't commenting on the story. But thank you for bringing us that update. Craig Hughes, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. I want to bring in Aoife Stokes now. Aoife's mother is in Category 4 of the vaccine priority list and is also a patient at the Beacon Hospital undergoing cancer treatment. And Aoife, good morning to you. I should also say that we are former colleagues. You used to work here in RTE television. Your mum is waiting to hear when she's going to get her vaccine. And how do you feel about this news this morning that these extra vaccine doses were there and they were given to teaching staff at St Gerard's School?
Yeah, morning, Claire. I woke up this morning and saw that front page, and I have to be honest, I was absolutely livid. Not just for my mother, who is Category 4. She's been undergoing cancer treatment with the Beacon for the last 3 years. And I should say, brilliant oncologists and nurses and people who've looked after her really, really well. But I find it absolutely shocking that given the other incidences we've seen before, that people like my mother who are being treated in the Beacon Hospital, who are in Category 4 and can't get answers about when they're due to receive their vaccine, despite it being allegedly being rolled out at the moment, were not considered for a standby list by the Beacon or by the HSE. Like, we live closer than Gerard's to the Beacon. And it's just really difficult for people like us to understand. And it doesn't have to be my mother. She meets, you know, plenty of people every time she's in there in the oncology ward. And I'm sure, you know, the Beacon have all the information about who lives close and who could be potentially called on at short notice to come in for the vaccine. And yet we can't even get an answer from the Beacon or the HSE as to when she or her cohort will be receiving the vaccine.
And clearly she's not on a standby list. You've been asking when she's going to get her vaccine. She's been asking as well. There is no standby list, as far as you're aware, where her name is down.
But worse than that, like, we've contacted our local GP, who have said, and the HSE website concurs with this, that it's the Beacon Hospital who will, the hospital where you're being treated, that will be administering your Category 4 vaccine. I've called the Beacon Hospital myself. They've told us they're waiting to hear from the HSE. My mother called the HSE again yesterday, wondering when would the Beacon Hospital be getting that information or what would be happening. And the woman she spoke to in the HSE told her, would she consider calling an out-of-hours GP? And this is in response to a query about when will my mother, who's Category 4, or, as I say, allegedly currently being rolled out, get the vaccine. And we live 10 minutes, 15 minutes max away from the Beacon. You know, it's very difficult to understand how a hospital serving and looking after patients like my mother does not include them on a standby list when they're an active category.
And what about what the CEO of the Beacon says today, Michael Cullen, this decision? He recognises that it wasn't in line with the sequencing guidelines. However, he says, it was made under time pressure and with a view to ensuring that the vaccine did not go to waste. And you know the constraints that are there with this vaccine. It has to be used quickly.
But how do they get to a point where at the end of the day, when they serve, as I say, so many other patients who are in the categories that are due to be vaccinated, how do they not have a standby list? I can't, it's really difficult for someone to understand that when you're worried about a loved one who's going through treatment, who is immunocompromised. And as I say, it's not just my family, there's so many families like us. It's very difficult to understand how the Beacon could not have a standby list or don't have a standby list when they're administering those vaccines and have a surplus. And instead of like having a standby list of their own patients, they're ringing people from another county who aren't on an at-risk group. It's really difficult to understand.
And your mother is eligible for this vaccine. It's the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's been told she is 100% Category 4, and the GP agrees and everybody she rings agrees, and I ring the Beacon and they agree she is. But there's no way for us to find out at any point when she is due to receive this vaccine. And there's the constant worry, obviously, of knowing you have somebody there living with this risk and being at increased risk of side effects if she was to contract COVID.
Yeah, and she's under 65, so clearly this vaccine would have been suitable for her
as well. She's 64, yeah.
Have you spoken to her today, Aoife?
Yeah, I haven't. She's absolutely livid like me. And like that, like, she's not somebody looking for any special treatment. She doesn't want to skip any queue. She has nothing but praise for the care she's received. But she cannot understand how people like her who are under the care of the Beacon were not seen as more of a priority or on a standby list in a way when there's going to be left out over vaccine, as opposed to people from a different county, from a school, who are not in an at-risk group. She just is absolutely baffled, and she's livid. And she, you know, she asked me to do this. She wanted me to talk to you this morning because she is really, really angry, I suppose, at how difficult it's been to get answers and then to see what's going on at the same time. It's very hard.
But, and you made that point that she's very happy with the care she's receiving at the Beacon.
Yeah, wonderful care, brilliant oncologists and nurses. But this, the organisation of this is very difficult to understand. It feels very shambolic. And when we've been trying for the last few weeks, since Category 4 allegedly went live, to find out what that means for her and people like her, and have been able to get no answers, I suppose it just really adds insult to injury to read that this morning.
Craig Hughes, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and Aoife Stokes. And later in the programme, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee responded to Aoife's story.
Well, I listened to Aoife. I mean, I don't blame her for being angry or livid, I think is the word she used. There's a very clear protocol in place, and there shouldn't be a situation where at 4:30 people are scrambling to find somebody to take the vaccine. There's a clear protocol that you work through the list, that you have people on standby, and if you run out of people, if for whatever reason people don't show up, then you move down the list. So it shouldn't be a situation where random people, or where, you know, there's a decision taken to go outside of that list. Paul Reid this morning said very clearly those protocols are in place. They were reiterated when we saw something like this happening in January, and they've been stressed multiple times.
Yeah, the problem is there's no consequences. You know, the CEO of the Beacon says this morning, yeah, I operated out of sequence, I apologise, but nothing happens beyond that, does it?
Look, it's a matter for whether it's the chief executive, Paul Reid, or those who are managing within the hospital groups, because it's obviously been set up through a structure to be worked through within the hospital groups. So it's for them to decide what happens. But there's a very clear protocol in place. And it just, you know, it frustrates people like Aoife and her mother, where they are Category 4, where they should be next on the list, and it's not happening. And I think it makes people feel as though, you know, there's a system or structure in place, but it's not working. And if it doesn't work, then the whole thing starts to fall apart. So we need to be sticking to those levels. They're there for a reason. It's not because I or any of my colleagues have identified who should be here or where. It's because health experts, it's because scientists, virologists have come together and identified these people should be categorised and this is the way it should work. So when people start moving outside of that, it people lose faith in the system itself, and it's very frustrating. And I'm frustrated to hear that this morning, and that it's happening still.
Okay. Minister for Justice Helen McEntee. And the anger was palpable as soon as the live line opened.
Nuala, you represent one element of our callers, and that is people who are just simply angry, and they have a reason to be angry. Go ahead, Nuala.
That's right, Joe. I'm absolutely fuming. That the Beacon, a private company, can decide to give the vaccinations to whoever they think they can give it, ignoring the government list. I'm sure there's plenty of schools and, you know, oncology patients nearer than County Wicklow that those vaccinations could have been given to.
And what's your situation?
Myself and my husband are foster carers for the past 17 years.
Okay.
Now I've been on to my social worker, team leader, principal social worker, area manager, HICWA, the Irish Foster Society, and I can't get a vaccination for myself and my husband. We have 4 children here, all school-going age, from the ages from 18 down to 12, so they're in primary and secondary school. Right? We haven't been allowed, we couldn't let the 2 of them go back to school 2 weeks ago at the risk of them bringing us home COVID to the house.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
You know, it is, and it's huge, and people are saying, the government are saying it's not in schools. It is in schools. I know for a fact 2 schools in my area that there's been cases of COVID, and it's been brought home to the household.
So you're saying to liberate your children and let them back to school, you would need the vaccine because the 2 of you have underlying conditions.
Exactly. And also, it's for their sake. They need to get back out.
I know,
they're,
I understand,
anxious and worried.
And what,
you know,
reaction what reaction have you got?
I was told, no, there's nowhere. And we are carers. We should fall under the carers.
I know that, yeah.
You know. So, but we've been told, no, there's nowhere in the pipeline is it that foster carers we are going to get the vaccination anytime soon.
Now, the earlier report, say there, Nuala, 51551 joe at rt.ie, the earlier report said, this is what I heard now, and I'm reading it again, the hospital said there were more than 200 no-shows. Now, that I immediately thought, oh my God, there's people not bothering to go and get their vaccination. But Maxine is there on 1850 715 815. Maxine, you can explain what the no-show, how this happened, because you're one of them, effectively, in the other direction. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hiya, Joe. So I'm a psychotherapist, so I'm considered 2F healthcare worker.
Okay.
So I got my text on Saturday to say to go to the Beacon on Tuesday. I was delighted. No, sorry, I got a text on Sunday.
Okay.
And so it's like an automated text, and you just have to reply either yes to confirm or to text another number if you want to cancel it.
Okay, simple, yeah.
Very simple.
And
so,
were you given a time on in the Beacon, Maxine?
Yes, I was given 12 o'clock in the Beacon.
Okay, great. And you were given, 24 hours notice?
Yes.
Which is enough, yeah.
Yeah, so okay. I texted yes, but then the day after that I got another text to say that my appointment was actually 12:45 in the Aviva.
Okay.
So I didn't know what to do, because I thought, well, if I cancel that, does that mean I'm going to be cancelled off everything?
Yeah.
And then I'm not on the list at all. And unfortunately, there was other people like me. You know, I just on a Facebook group for other psychotherapists, and there was another few people who had the same two messages. So we were trying frantically to get in contact with the HSE.
Okay.
And
there's no other, when you get this message, you get this text about your vaccination, you can either confirm or cancel. That's all.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I tried
you can't ask them a question. You can't type in saying, hang on, does this mean my other one is cancelled? I've just been moved location.
No. Yeah.
Okay, so what did you do?
Yeah, so we tried Googling numbers, see if there's anybody we can get in contact with. So in the end, what I did was I actually tweeted HSE Live.
Okay.
So it's not very private.
You tagged them in a public tweet. Yeah, you have.
Yeah. So, they eventually got back to me asked me to send, I kind of tweeted them and then went to work. And then when I got home from work, I had a look at the phone and they said, can you send screenshots? So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the next day, Tuesday, which was the day of the vaccine, that they came back to me and they asked me for a whole lot of kind of private details, you know, which I did give them, but I felt strange giving those details to an anonymous Twitter handle. So, yeah, I gave them all the details, where I worked and all the rest of it, and I didn't hear anything else from them then. It was 1 o'clock, which was after the vaccine, that they said they'd look into it.
And where did you get vaccinated?
So I decided I'd just go to the Beacon, and if I wasn't there, I'd run over, I'd fly over in the car to the Aviva.
No, but my point is, so you got vaccinated in the Beacon.
I did.
But by you getting vaccinated in the Beacon, you're worried that you're down as a no-show for the Aviva.
Yeah.
But you're not. But you're not. That's nothing. When they said, now again, the Beacon statement, I'd get it in full. But they said it was 200 no shows. But you weren't. You weren't a no show. You were given two separate appointments by the HSE, and you had no facility. You did your best. You went public by tagging a tweet to them.
Yeah.
So you went public. You couldn't get through. Couldn't get an answer. So the vaccine is just, especially in Ireland now, it's just so precious, so precious. And we know how important it is. It's a gateway for so many people who don't have COVID, but it's a gateway for Nuala to let her children go back to school.
Yeah.
So you're down as a no-show for the Aviva. Did you get any response from the HSE?
As I said, at 1 o'clock, I just got a response from the Twitter thing to say, yeah, we'll look into it.
They didn't tell you where to go, but...
No, but sure, at that stage, I'd already gone to the Beacon and got my vaccine.
Yeah, okay.
And as soon as I got it, I pressed cancel on the other vaccine. But sure, I mean, that wouldn't have been enough notice, you know?
Yeah.
So okay, I'm not angry. I'm disappointed to think that there's a vaccine.
Well, that to me explains something that had not been properly explained so far. Maybe I didn't hear everything this morning. But and that is that you're not no shows. You weren't sitting at home on your deck drinking a pina colada saying, no. I don't believe in vaccines.
No.
You had said yes, but then you got a second appointment and you had no facility to inquire, to ask questions, and you're worried that clicking and a cancellation would tell the system you don't want the vaccine, which is not what you did. Okay, so you're vaccinated. And your vaccination, were you affected, for example, by the AstraZeneca debacle, the shutdown for the week?
Yeah, so I was actually supposed to get the vaccine the week before, but I was cancelled. Yeah.
Okay, Maxine, thanks indeed. James McGill, 51551 Marshalls. James, good afternoon. Yeah, the vaccine again. When were you due to get your vaccine, James?
Hi, Joe. I was originally meant to get my vaccine Monday of last week.
Okay.
I received a text message on Friday, similar to your last caller, with a date and time for Monday, yes or no. And then, obviously, with the AstraZeneca mix-up, it was cancelled. And I'm yet to receive an update on an appointment.
And what James, can I ask what cohort you're in?
I'm in cohort 4, so I'm recovering from lymphoma of the brain. Okay.
So that's a pretty serious cohort. That is pretty necessary. And the vaccine is pretty. So have you? We were told one that the shutdown for a week of AstraZeneca wouldn't make any difference. Of course it would. Like if vaccines are so precious, what difference has it made to you? When are you due to get the AZ?
I don't know. There's been no update. I've spoken to my GP. She doesn't know. I've spoken to several other cancer patients who are supposed to receive the AstraZeneca. One has received their injection. The others are the same as myself with no update. So when you hear something like that today, mm-hmm. I have no issue with vaccine going to waste or going to teachers. Yeah. It's the logistical mess that the HSE has made of the situation.
Yeah. By the way, do you live near the Beacon Hospital, by any chance?
Not too far. Okay. I mean, closer. I'm in the same county.
Yeah, but
probably about 30 minutes.
Okay, you're closer.
I could be there in a half an hour.
Look at this way. You're closer to Sandyford than Bray is to Sandyford.
Yes, I am.
Okay, James.
And
now,
I find it very hard to believe that they couldn't find 20 people in a radius of Sandyford.
Well, in the radius of the elevator in the Beacon, you'd find 20 people.
Exactly.
Noodle was pointing out that the vaccine would liberate her children to go to school if she gets the vaccination. What gateway will the vaccine open for you?
Well, I'm waiting to go into the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
Okay.
And I will not be comfortable going into a facility without being vaccinated.
Yeah, I totally understand.
I managed to avoid it for a year and in hospital. I can't take that risk again.
I'm so sorry. You have lymphoma of the brain.
Is that okay? Yeah, I'm in recovery.
I'm good. That's good because that's what I'm reading here. You left hospital in December and you're all in favour, as you say, of use up the vaccine, but there must be a better way. This is just
causing so much anger. But when there's a level of nepotism thrown into play here.
Nepotism. It's not. Anne-Marie in Wicklow. Anne-Marie, Joe, stay with us, Joe at rt.ie. The school is saying, the school aren't saying anything. The hospital are saying there was 200 no-shows because people, we now discover, have been double booked. So it wasn't the fault of the no-shows. Let's be clear about that. The majority of vaccines were subsequently used for HSE staff who were directed at Beacon. And 20 leftover vaccines were then sent to the school was contacted and they said, can you get 20 of your staff up here? And they said, yes. Now, why are you so annoyed, Anne-Marie?
I'm really annoyed, Joe. I have a sister who's in her early 40s. She's a child, one child. She has insulin-dependent diabetes. She's got an insulin pump and a sensor pump attached to her abdomen. She barely sleeps with alarms going every night. It's taken incredible measures to keep herself and my 80-year-old mum safe for the last year. We've been doing everything by the book. And we're desperate for her to get the vaccine, as she is desperate to get the vaccine. I mean, the data suggests diabetic patients have a very poor outcome. Yeah, they're looking at death or being impaired for the rest of their life, significantly impaired for the rest of their life if they get it, right? Mm. So when we hear the story breaking this morning, I just feel utterly appalled that the HSC, I mean, we had a similar story in when the Master of the Coombe dished it out to a number of people in the hospital, relatives of staff, right?
Including his own relatives.
Including his own relatives, exactly.
Young people.
This is, first of all...
And students, students in the hospital.
That's
student nurses didn't get it.
High-risk vulnerable people, like my sister, like that gentleman you've just had on with the brain lymphoma. High-risk vulnerable people should be at the top of the list. The government has had ample time to set up a register. In America, they have an online register called Dr. B or Dumpster Vaccines. Anybody can sign up, and that prevents any vaccines being discarded and wasted, right? My sister is 20 minutes from the Beacon Clinic. We would have had her in the Beacon Clinic in 5 minutes for that vaccine if we'd known that that was available.
And you were saying, for her, it almost... No, we can't put it that way. But for her, it's such a life-important, life-enhancing vaccine given her under...
It's life or death.
Okay.
Or literally significantly impaired for the rest of her life if she gets it. And the stress that that has on the family, trying to keep herself and my 8-year-old mum protected... I mean, it's huge.
Okay.
And the measures we've taken to keep them protected. But high risk, I find it incredible. That
now, the other element as well, Anne-Marie, is the hospital rings the school. The school could have said no. No, actually,
absolutely.
We don't want to.
That's another minefield. But my message is to the government.
Or maybe individual teachers did say no. Say, no, I'm not skipping the queue.
I can't comment because
I don't know
how the message was communicated to the teachers. But
okay.
I certainly feel what the government is dragging its feet. It's completely taken a year to set up quarantine as the whole country's been engulfed with variants. And now this register, why hasn't the register been
and
set
it's
up?
The vaccination, we're told, and all the evidence is from Israel, from the UK, from various other countries, that the vaccine is a lifesaver, literally a lifesaver. And that's
absolutely
why people are so, so upset when they hear
really upset. I've never rang a talk show in my life before, but I was utterly compelled to ring this morning. I just felt so terrible for all the high-risk people have to be prioritised. They have to be prioritised. And the register has to be set up that this does not happen again.
Anne-Marie chatting to Joe Duffy. And the Beacon Hospital is in TD Neil Richmond's constituency. He had this to say on Drive Time.
People are livid. They cannot understand why such a reckless, callous decision was made by hospital management, and indeed why people thought it was appropriate to do. This isn't the first time this has happened. Within 5 kilometres of the Beacon Hospital alone, Cormac, there are 27 GP surgeries. Spoken to a number of doctors today who said if they had a phone call, they had any number of people who could have been in that hospital within 20 minutes. This is within 5 kilometres, not the 14 kilometres at the school in Bray was.
It's 14 kilometres away.
14 kilometres away. So within 5 kilometres, 27 surgeries. They have people on their lists in their 70s, extremely ill people. I had one 17-year-old on to me. He's got cystic fibrosis. He hasn't been able to leave the house in a year. And they're looking and seeing this. In addition, and as you mentioned, there are a number of family members of people, patients, who are in the Beacon Hospital now receiving treatment from cancer and other diseases who still haven't been vaccinated.
And there are primary care centres close by as well.
There's a primary care centre in Ballally in Dundrum and another one in Ballyogan, both within 5 kilometres as well. And there's also an abundance of schools, including 3 Desh schools, within less than a kilometre. So what happened here, Neil? Well, this is why I think the statement given by Beacon Hospital is completely inappropriate. It doesn't go far enough. And indeed, the fact that the school thinks that it can't give us or it doesn't have to give a statement is absolutely ridiculous. People want some clarity before they also want action on this. So we need to know, how did it happen? Why did it happen? Why didn't they find the very clear guidelines? Why, if they gave out 20 doses, you know, there's 10 doses per vial, why weren't they simply put back in storage to give it to someone the next day who hadn't been part of the 200 that were cancelled? Well, it doesn't take a rocket science to work out that, unfortunately, there were some relationships here. You know, how is it that...
We don't know that for sure. What we know is what the hospital spokesperson said. They said the Beacon Hospital immediately, when the issue arose, immediately liaised with the HSE. And the majority of these excess vaccines were subsequently used for HSE staff who were redirected to Beacon Hospital throughout the afternoon. That's what I read in media today,
Subsequent to that, Cormac, they said late in the evening they had 20 spare. That represents 2 vials, 10 doses per vial. And they made a decision to ring the staff and teachers of a school 14 kilometres away, whereas they could have rung any one of 27 GP surgeries and had 20 people there in half the time.
So was this plan concocted along with the HSE?
I don't think so, but certainly what I am going by what Paul Reid said to Morning Ireland this morning, I'd be very surprised. But I think we need to see a couple of things now. First and foremost, we actually need to see a statement from the school. It's not acceptable. They are in receipt of state money. They are a state beneficiary. They have to make a statement. Secondly, the Beacon Hospital need to answer clear issues. Why did it happen? What are their guidelines? Who made this decision? I've heard a lot of politicians out already saying that the CEO must resign, and that's fine, but again, this is a private hospital, so there's no area for the state to make a sanction to that. But indeed, the CEO of the Beacon Hospital, that's engaged in a state contract, very large contract, not just in terms of vaccine rollout, but also part of the response, the hospital response to COVID-19, they need to come before the Health Committee. And
should there be consequences in terms of them keeping the state contract?
I think that's something that has to be looked at. Because I think
What's your opinion on it? Should that be rescinded?
Well, let's put things in context. The first and foremost priority, Cormac, is actually getting these vaccines rolled out. And it's the same
Something is happening which you say you have received significant feedback from. Mm-hmm. Angry constituents. There's a state element to the contract that the Beacon Hospital has. You're angry with what happened. Should the contract be rescinded or part thereof?
And this is my very important point, Cormac. Why I want to see the Beacon Hospital and the HSC come before the Health Committee, why I've already liaised with the Minister for Health that this requires proper scrutiny and auditing by the HSC, because of all these things that it's been pointed towards, of course contracts should be rescinded. But there's no point me or any other politician demanding...
Should the CEO of the Beacon Hospital resign, as Eoin Reardon said?
If things are amiss, absolutely, that could be the moral response. But
as things stand
that
now, you say yes or no?
Well, I think we need to get the full clarity, and I think it's really important that we get an element of due process. But if things pan out as people, it seems to appear they are, of course... This is grossly unacceptable. Remember, these vaccines are public property. And what's really so frustrating, Cormac, is it undermines the fact that the Beacon has vaccinated over 9,000 people and employ 1,000 people locally and is a well-respected health institution.
Stay with me for a second, Neil, if you don't mind, because I have as well Dr. Ethna Brenner, who's a GP in Goree in County Wexford. Ethna, tell me what happened in your GP clinic yesterday as well. Some coincidence, but not exactly the same outcome.
So we had a full day vaccinating yesterday, and when you open any vial with those vaccines in it, you have a 6-hour window to use them up or they have to be discarded. And these are very carefully recorded on vial traceability forms, and these should be available everywhere. And we came to use up the vaccines, and we had one surplus vaccine, and that's because in some of the bottles you'll get an extra dose out of it. So we, of course, had to prioritise who to give that to. We had a patient there who asked if his wife could have that extra dose, and she wasn't in our age group to be vaccinated. And we said, no, unfortunately, we couldn't. You know, these are not our property to gift to whoever we choose. We have to follow the guidelines of priority of who needs those the greatest from healthcare needs.
But there's time pressure, we were told.
Yes, but it, you know, there's time pressure of 6 hours. So we rang up a few patients, and when we had one person within that age group who was eligible in the priority groups, he was down with us within 10 minutes and we had him vaccinated. And that's wonderful. But some of the response I've seen from the Beacon said that the time pressure was at 4:30 p.m. when they had 20 made up vaccines left that do actually have to be used. They can't be stored overnight if they're opened. That it was a question of getting them used before 6 p.m. when staff went home. Well, I'd love to be getting home at 6 o'clock every evening. If somebody said to me, listen, we've a few vaccines here, could you stay on for 15 or 20 minutes? We're rounding up a few patients at most need. Of course, any healthcare worker administering vaccines would wait that time and make sure that they were given the priority to the right patients.
Goree-based GP Etna Brenner on this evening's Drive Time with Cormac O'Hara and Sarah McInerney. Two women from Cork have become the first same-sex couple in the country to be legally recognised as the parents of their babies from birth, following the enactment from last May of the final sections of the 2015 Child and Family Relationships Act. The new act recognises as parents both the birth mother and her spouse, civil partner or cohabitant, where a child was donor-conceived through donor-assisted human reproduction. On the News at One, new mum Geraldine Ray spoke to Brian Dobson.
Geraldine, a very good afternoon to you. Congratulations. How are the girls, first of all?
They're very good. We're just getting to grips with the lack of sleep with them at the moment, but they're enjoying themselves.
they're still very much new arrivals, just a few weeks.
Yeah, they were 7 weeks yesterday, so sleeping through the night isn't one of their favourite things just yet.
No, and I suppose with twins, once you get one sorted out, the other yeah. needs attention.
Yeah, and I think they can telepathically talk to each other at the moment to say, I'm going to have a little bit of a sleep now, let you kick off.
Well, it's a wonderful time for both yourself and Niamh, and all the more so because of this change in the law allows you both to be registered as their parents on their birth certificates.
I know, that's fantastic. When we began the kind of this whole journey, we didn't actually realise it wasn't fully enacted yet. We assumed when the referendum passed that, you know, we'd be good to go. And it was only when I was nearing the end of my pregnancy that we started Googling how, you know, to go about the birth certificate and things like that, that we realised that we would be close enough to some of the first people to have it in Ireland, but we didn't have any idea that we would be the first.
Yeah, and it's based on the moment of conception, I think, rather than their birthday date.
It is indeed, yeah. So the fertility clinics in Ireland were all closed until the first week of June. So we actually were brought in for our procedure 2 days after they reopened. So I think that's why we're so far up the list. So we had originally planned to have the procedure in March 2020, and the week of the procedure it was cancelled due to the lockdown. So we kind of spent a long lockdown thinking what could have been. But now we have two beautiful, healthy baby girls out of it. So the wait was worth it.
And so important for lots of reasons that you're both registered and recognised as their parents.
Yeah, so both my name and Niamh's name were able to go down as parents immediately. Up until that point, couples had to go to court, and that took, you know, upwards of 8 months sometimes to get finalised. So for 8 months, you would only one legally recognised parent. If, you know, God forbid something terrible was to have happened, the other parent had no rights, really, no legal rights at all. So we're really happy.
Geraldine Ray on the News at One. Oliver had that Friday feeling this morning, and along with his usual daily digest of news stories that have caught his attention, he gave us a taste of the latest episode of Callan's Kicks.
Lots going on this week. We'll have the Taoiseach, of course, announcing the whole hell quarantining thing. It's a great day to clamp down on the scourge of stag parties coming in from Botswana and Hindus coming in from Angola. And of course, pilgrimages from Narnia, I think, but not Legoland. We need to keep them lads to build the children's hospital, which is still on target for its 2027 thingamajiggy, but I'm Cork going forward anyway. And we're also, we've got Leo, he's going to be doing his podcast as well, The Leo Lens, still hashtag distracted by Leo the Leaks, how dare you. And Eamon Ryan is totally distracted by the barrel of bananas that the Green Party is in this week. And all because of the Shannon elections. It's always the little things in politics, isn't it? You know, literally the thing that no one cares about out there. I think a lot of people forget the Shannon even exists. It's like the press for all the kind of stuff that you wanted to throw away but or put in a charity shop. But you think you might get the use out of one last time, like a Krupp soda stream that you once used. You said you'd use it all the time and then, you know, you don't. But so yeah, the Shannon, very much the Krupp's soda stream of Irish politics, with Eamon Ryan, who's the leader of the remains of the Green Party, and I want to be a real boy. So there you go, that's looking forward to that. Yeah, the Shannon, it's just 12 David Norrises basically snoozing, isn't it, Shannon Heron? I've been here for 75 years. I'm 80% mahogany and velvet curtain at this stage. Yes, Mr. Cahillock, didn't even like Ulysses. Quiet, please, now. We're also covering the Claire Byrne live incident, which, of course, had the entire country talking on Monday, and a special little tribute to the Tommy Tiernan show. You know, where quiet, meaningful Tommy is there, but he's going to interview loud comedy Tommy. So anyway, I won't go into any more detail. You have to wait until 6:30 this evening on this channel and as on the podcast for your walks across the weekend as well. Actually, on the subject of funny stuff, this is real life comedy now because Gavin Riley of Virgin Media Television said yesterday there were giggles in the Dáil because it turned out the Laskeán Comhairle mistook Fianna Fáil's Paul McAuliffe for his not even vaguely lookalike Sinn Féin's Chris Andrews. We mixed them all up and he got all flustered and the Taoiseach said, I shouldn't be embarrassed because, well, I'm regularly mistaken for the Taoiseach and we look nothing alike. Which is the real thing he said. And lots of people pointing out that it was actually a good line, in fairness to him. Just kind of a bit of comic relief for everything, all the pressures.
Well, it was nice to see things weren't as frosty as usual in the Dáil. If only the same could be said for the rest of the country.
Was it Monday or Tuesday we were discussing? People were down in Cork were talking about a ring around the moon. Oh my God, is he the ring around the moon? Near a ring, you could see it from Ringaskiggy. And lots of folklore sayings were kind of pointed out this was a sign of some foul weather to come. And yes, the Irish Independent, Ralph Regal down there, tells us that the country faces snow and hail showers as daytime temperatures are to fall to 5 degrees. So those pagans were right all along. They know stuff. We're going to have a 12 degree drop in temperatures compared with last week, with a risk of snow showers on higher ground. Met Aaron has forecast chilly conditions for the next 24 hours or so, but drier, milder weather is returned next week. The forecasted wintry conditions are the result of cold weather front drawn over Ireland and Northern Europe from the North Atlantic. So ring around the moon and you'll have to spoon to stay warm. There's a rhyme, something in there anyway. You heard that chat about Mary Lavan Place and dedicating a place named to notable Irish women in history. And you might have heard Ryan a couple of weeks ago talking about the Irish woman who shot Benito Mussolini. This is Violet Gibson. And she came from an Anglo-Irish community and she attempted to shoot the Italian leader in 1926. But Mussolini moved his head at the last minute. And the first shot grazed his nose when the second misfired. RT.ie tells us that a plaque to the memory of the Irish woman has been formally approved by a Dublin City Council committee. So the memorial to Violet Gibson will be put up at 12 Merrion Square, which was her childhood home. A motion was proposed by independent councillor Mannix Flynn and was passed by the Commemoration and Naming Committee. So that's good news. Mind you, Merrion Square must be coming down with plaques. There's plaques on everything, isn't there? The most visited thing, I think, on the street anyway, was that Oscar Wilde statue you used to see. Somebody was always milling around, weren't they? They really like the visitors, they absolutely love it. And even in lockdown times, I remember going over to it, I'm going to go see it now because there'd be nobody there. And there was always someone knocking around. It's really well done. Gorgeous statue. Yes, of course. I'm glad I was an expert at that. No, stop. Stop, Mr. Norris. That's enough. Joe Biden was out and about yesterday. He gave his first press conference since becoming president. It's kind of like, you know, taking it nice and slow. God, they should take a leaf out of that book over here. We're trying to stop them doing press conferences every 5 minutes here. But I actually tuned into it and No, he was Joe Biden, you know. He lost his train of thought quite a bit. But in his defence, there is a train of thought at least happening compared to the previous. Anyway, he was asked in the press conference about the plight of migrants at the US-Mexico border. Huge issue again, and lots of unaccompanied children arriving at the border. It's a bit of an issue. He basically said Kamala Harris, Kamala, has to do it now. So it's kind of like, whoa, that's a short straw. Although he did call her President Harris last week, which was, she was sitting there going, she did her cackling thing. You know, she's a very iconic cackle. Anyway, he was asked about the plight of migrants, many of whom are housed in overcrowded detention facilities. And his answer was interesting in, I suppose, the context of the UK-US special relationship. Have a listen.
When my great-grandfather got in a coffin ship in the Irish Sea, expectation was he going to live long enough on that ship to get to the United States of America. But they left because of what the Brits had been doing. They were in real, real trouble. They didn't want to leave, but they had no choice. So I can't guarantee we're going to solve everything, but I can guarantee we can make everything better.
Doesn't hold back, does he? It's one of those moments where he thinks, oh, this is a private conversation. It's because of what the Brits are doing to us when they were burning all the potatoes. Speaking of potatoes, Tato Park is to build a new roller coaster after planning bosses gave the go-ahead, according to the Irish Mirror. A huge roller coaster, the Mirror tells us, will be built in Tato Park. 15 million. Coaster 2021 is the project in that attraction up in Ashburn, County Meath, because we only have one theme park really in Ireland, and it's dedicated to a giant deep-fried salted potato. So, you know. Anyway, Ray Coyle, who's the owner, he's promised any noise by passengers will be drowned out. So they approved it after 28 months. I have to say, I do love the Cuchulainn. Cuchulainn, yes, it's the wooden roller coaster. I think this is the biggest wooden roller coaster in Europe. It sounds like it could be the only one. But and if you're into roller coasters, which I am, the wooden thing, everyone goes, ah, it's made of wood. You couldn't go. No, it's like it kind of bends and rattles attractively for those of us on the on the roller coasters. So they'll have to have a new one. And they'll have to give it a good Irish name as well. I doubt Coaster 2021 is the thing. Anyway, Tato Park, by the way, is still Irish owned, even though Tato is owned by the Germans, isn't it? A bit like the way Jameson Irish whiskey is owned by the French. Guinness is owned by the Brits and so on. There's nothing left really at this stage, is there? Anyway, there we go. Speaking of the Brits, actually. Yeah, the Brits. What are they doing now? They're such... Joe, be easy now. We're getting along with them. They're not moving away from us. The Tory MP, Sir Charles Walker, announced a bizarre protest. He was obviously voting against the latest lockdown restrictions in the United Kingdom. And it's a bit mad. Anyway, Sir Charles Walker, MP from Bishop upon Waitrose or something like that. He's one of many Conservative backbenchers who rebelled against the extension, but they were defeated anyway. And he said, well, he had a bizarre pledge, shall we say, about what he's going to do as a protest. Let's have listened to Sir Charles.
Now, Madam Deputy Speaker, my protest, as I said, will be about none of those things. It will simply be about the price of milk. And as I said, for the next few days, I will have that pint on me. It will be of symbolic importance to me. And at the end of the day, it will be warm. It will have separated. And I can choose whether to drink it or pour it away, because it will be robbed of its refreshing elegance by the time it's been in my pocket for 12 hours. And if I pour it away, that might cause people some concern, but it doesn't matter, because it's my pint of milk and it's my protest, and I'm not seeking people's acclaim, endorsement, support.
No.
My protest.
No idea what he's talking about, but he's going to walk around with milk. What an honourable chap. Very, very honourable. And actually, Boris Johnson might have something. I would salute the right honourable gentleman on his protest, which will expose the absolute trouserlessness of this government's response to the pandemic. But I'm afraid the most Tories are, in fact, lactose, are intolerant. Yes, in fact, we're intolerant of many, many things, such as people from Liverpool, low-carb diets. Being intolerant of things is how you get into the Conservative and Unionist Party, and we are very proud of that in the United Kingdom. I wish you well in this curdlesome, milky bar kid, cream egg protest. Thank you very much, Mr. Boris Johnson. Which reminds me again of the story we were talking about yesterday, when you think of Boris Johnson, because, you know, penises basically come to mind, micro penises, because we heard Erin Brockovich, a new book, saying that pollution in the atmosphere is causing human penises to shrink, according to scientists. And Greta Thunberg got in touch on Twitter when she saw the Sky News flash about this, and she just tweets, "See you all at the next climate strike."
So, a surge in climate activism, no doubt, for 49% of the population. Anyway, ding dong. I mean, sorry. TikTok.
And don't forget, the clocks are changing at the weekend because everyone says, what is it? Spring forward, fall back, which kind of annoys me because obviously it's an Americanism, fall back. But it still works, doesn't it? But so why do we frantically try to remember the change of clocks twice a year? What's all that about? Oh, by the way, before I get into that, I should tell you, daylight saving time, it begins at 1 a.m. on Sunday, the 28th of March. And so at 1 a.m. you put your clock forward, it becomes 2 a.m. magically, and it doesn't change again until Halloween. Anyway, don't need to care about that for the moment. So RT.ie is asking, why does it happen? Under EU law, all member states, all the clocks go back on the last Sunday in October. Yes, we know this. They also do it in America and in Canada, but they've done it a few weeks ago, so slight time changes now. But countries like China, Japan and India don't follow it. So how did this all begin? I find this very interesting. Well, a British man named William Willett, backed by Winston Churchill, this is all pre-World War I, suggested the idea to make the most of the natural light. He wanted more time to enjoy the outdoors in the evenings and told the British government that Londoners were wasting much of the summer light asleep. But the Brits, they didn't like it. They didn't listen to the idea, didn't like it, rejected the idea. But it came up again after he died when countries were trying to reduce their demand for coal in World War I by gaining more daylight hours. So while his country was slow to take him up on the idea, the Germans decided to try it out in 1916 to allow for more light while they worked. And then that spread to other European countries, to Russia, the US. And after the war, they kept up the tradition, except for those aforementioned countries. And we get a statement every year because the Minister for Justice, I think, is also the Minister for Time, which reminds me of Alan Shatter, who was always a very good Minister for Time. Hello, I'm the Minister for Time, because there's something of the night, isn't there? Yes, Alan Shatter, remember all that? Now, superhero news, very important. Derry Girls news. Or if you're listening in from the GUP, we could give all sides after that debate. London Derry Girls, as Arlene Foster would call it. Saoirse Monica Jackson, who's the star, the lead actor, if you like, Erin Quinn on the hit show. She's actually from Derry Donegal area herself. She's landed a role in the upcoming DC Comics film, The Flash, alongside Ben Affleck. Oh, that's a pity for her. But anyway, she's in The Flash and Ron Livingston. And the comic book adaptation based on The Flash, who uses superpower speed to save the world. That's coming out in November 2022. So a huge role for Saoirse Monica Jackson there. Actually, another superhero news. Helen Mirren is going to be in the superhero film. That's the headline I'm seeing here. She's a 75-year-old woman. So this is a great chance to showcase that being a superhero isn't just about being young and at Olympic levels. Oh, she's playing the villain. They were so close to making a statement there, weren't they? Now, meanwhile, Prince's ashes, according to entertainment.ie, they're going on display for his fifth anniversary, apparently, in Minneapolis. So you can go see it, apparently. The music icon's anniversary is approaching and they're grimly putting his ceramic urn on display in Paisley Park with his famous symbol on the top of it. Now, this can be a problem if you're an Irish Prince fan because, you know, you're at a checkpoint and do you know that visiting graveyards, you can go over the 5 kilometres. It's an essential visit, yeah? You can go to a graveyard and you can break the 5 kilometre limit to visit that. So you're at the checkpoint, the guard says, where are you going? And you just say, graveyard. Because that's the exemption, you know, and you're going to visit someone who's very dear to you. You don't have to. It just so happens that your chosen graveyard is in Minnesota and so on. No, get away with that. Or sure, if you wanted a holiday away from the family, you could just go up to Dublin Airport and just shout, whoa, just home from Malawi. What a trip that was. And you'd be sent off into a hotel, 1850, free meals. You know, and you get 2 weeks in a hotel there, full quarantine. Should you have a great time?
With the forecast you've just given us, don't be giving us ideas, Oliver. So that's Oliver Callan signing off for the moment on The Ryan Tuberty Show. The past 12 months seem to have been, apart from the obvious, all about sourdough, starters, homemade kimchi and banana bread. And if I'm exhausted just reading the tweets about all this, imagine my reaction to this.
One of the other things that's come out of lockdown is that people are preparing their pets' food from scratch. Is that you? Do you cook for your cat or your dog? DIY dog food is all the rage. And now people are sharing recipes for dog food and cat food. I don't know if it's going to take off.
And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of all the talk about COVID kilos and watching what I eat. It's time for someone else's diet to be scrutinised.
Our dog is mad for chips in our house. But then again, he'll eat anything. Our toddler throws stuff off the table for him. We find in our house, if you give them anything out of the ordinary, then you could be dealing with a mess the next morning. So we're very strict about food. But chatting this morning to people on Zoom call, seemingly a lot of cats have a penchant for pizza. Seemingly that seems to be a very popular food choice with cats. And I'm sure your particular pet has an idiosyncrasy when it comes to eating. There's another person, who is it? Neve said that she knows a friend of hers whose dog eats apples and pears, and they eat them in a very human-like fashion. They capture them between the front two paws, and then they'll just lick it a bit, and then they'll take a little bite out of it and continue on like that.
Okay, that dog does have a better diet than me. Maybe I'm part cat.
Oh my God, I thought it was just our mad cat who's crazy for pizza crusts. And my cat loves soft, warm ice cream, says Lucy. And our dog eats shoes and wood and couches and curtains and anything. Help. I'm not an expert. It sounds to me like you have a pup there and they'll grow out of it. Our golden retriever pup ate a trampoline. So there you go. Our new puppy is mad for the rugby on TV. He's watched all the Six Nations men's matches, start to finish. It's priceless. He's mucking about now in the park with a bashed up ball, Betty. Well, Betty, there's another game on tonight. It's France v Scotland, isn't it? And if France win it by 21 points and get a bonus point or something like that, they win the championship. And if they don't, then Wales win it. And then there's a big match on tomorrow in the Pro 14 when Leinster take on Munster. That'll be a good one. So loads of entertainment for your pup on the rugby front over the weekend. Our dog, half Labrador, half Pointer, eats apples, pears, bananas, plums, grapes, pieces of orange, carrots, stalks from cabbage leaves and raw eggs. I don't want to be around when he, you know, does his business. Thank you very much.
And moving swiftly on.
We had a rescue dog for 19 years and every morning he had a banana and a cup of tea. Sorry, I just have a picture of the dog sitting up at the kitchen table, you know, the banana in one paw and the cup of tea in the other. My dog loves orange segments. She's straight over to me once I start peeling one. And when I used to visit my late mum, I said to my husband, we were having steak today. And when we got into her house, she said, I have a big steak on for the dog. So she used to feed the dog steak. I'm sure she wasn't on her own in that regard. And our dog ate a trampoline too. We were a bit worried about him, but he bounced back fine. Hey!
No better man for the dad jokes than Ray Darcy. Well, that's it for Playback Daily this week. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.